I killed a man, they said, and I smashed in his head, and I left him laying dead, damn his eyes. But a swinging I must go, I must go. A swinging I must go, I must go. A swinging I must go, while you critters down below yell up, Sam, I told you so. Well, damn your eyes.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT, Champaign 90.1 on your FM dot.
And Dave on the board. This is the Prairie Monk program, WEFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, conservation, preservation, and everything like that. Today is Sunday, March the 18th, 2018.
And it's a nice day.
It's a beautiful day. If you've got a bicycle, go out and ride. The views and opinions expressed.
And they... Pocket Prairie is doing well. I was out there taking out fallen twigs that make it look ugly. And I accidentally pulled up one or two plants, and there were little red shoots ready to come out in spring. And I walk around Westside Park, and I find the tulips and are up and doing well. Couple of passings before we do anything else. Tom Burns passed. He was an engineer for Burns and Clancy, a surveyor, a statewide rep, but he was also a man about town, a citizen, a civic leader. He taught, and he was a professional as well as a community organizer, and we'll miss Tom Burns. Ruth Walker passed, and Ruth Walker was a sculptress. She had a wonderful tree in her front yard that was sort of a sculpted piece that she'd worked on. And she was a poet. We've had her on WEFT as a poet. She put together a poetry journal for years and had other people to come to do that. She was a possum lady. She was a conservationist, so she had a basement with possums in it, and she had Soupy, and I think she was hoping that Soupy would find a mate in the community. There certainly were mates, and I think at one stage she had Soupy on a leash and would take her for walks. She was a pawpaw lady. The front yard was loaded with pawpaw trees. There's probably not a tree, but they're a large shrub. And they have this, they're a custard apple family member and custard apples are more tropical, so these are plants that have a flavor of fruit salad and nice big seeds in them. They don't travel very well, so you don't find them on the supermarket. But they're very flavorful. Even if they fall on the ground, you pick them up and use them. There's a song, picking up pawpaws, put them in your pocket. And so Ruth would be at conservation meetings regularly and bring pawpaws. So we will miss her. And I think there will be a memorial to her at the Red Herring, I think. I don't have that detail with me. But that's very deserving and a very friendly life. I'm going to ask David to say something about... We went to a Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and I think David and I were both impressed by the fact that we were learning some history here. So David might want to say something about that meeting.
Sure. I'm sorry I wasn't here that day. One of the things I brought back from that conference was a very bad head cold, so I had to call Dave that morning and say, I'm contagious. I should just stay home. But yes, this was my fourth year, I think, going up with Dave to this, and it's conservationists from all around the state, largely, I think, from the Chicago area, because this is where there's more people up there, probably more concentration of conservable space. But anyway, so I got to listen to all of these folks across 2 days, and for the fourth year in a row, it was just a blast. All of these people are doing things that are so different from each other, even though they have the same cause at heart. They want to preserve as much natural area as they can. And it's interesting how many of them, when they got up, sounded exactly like the Prairie Monk. They said, do you realize we're down to 1/100th, 0.01% of the prairie that we used to have here? They all said this. So they all obviously, even if they're not preserving prairie personally, they're all cognizant of this fact, and it's in the backs of many of their minds when they're doing their work. But easily, at the end of the conference, they ask you to give them feedback. They give you a list of all of the speakers, and if you have comments, you can leave them. And for two of the people in particular, Fran Hardy, who you hear Dave talk about, and one of the older gentlemen who's been in conservation in Illinois, I don't know what his name
was. Guy Fraker.
Okay. They both, for about a half an hour, talked. And I could have listened to them go on for at least another half an hour if they had just had, you know, two sessions, one the first day and come back the second day, because there's just so much institutional memory there. They know so much, and it was fascinating to hear as they worked back. You know, in a younger way, I feel myself doing this, like sometimes around WEF, people will say, hey, what if we did this? And I find myself saying, well, back in 04, you know, 14 years ago, we tried that, and here's why it didn't work, which doesn't mean you shouldn't try it now. It just means here's what it looks like went wrong back then. So avoid these things, you know, do it differently if you do it now in 14. So it was really a blast. There are some younger folks who got up there and were talking about this social media thing that's all the rage these days, and explained how important it is and how behind the curve we already are if we're simply using Facebook to get the word out, because Instagram and Snapchat, and those are ones that I know the names of, so there must be newer ones than that are what the younger folks, if we're trying to get the actual younger crowd involved, that's where you would need to go.
I was impressed by the fact that they've been doing some research to find out what regions of the state respond to what media. If you're in Chicago area and you're used to a different paradigm, then you use that one. And that might be email. And if you're in a younger population, you'll use a different one again. There's a warning that if you're going to get to younger people who are used to looking at visuals, you must have a folder with a visual on the front of it and a very short sentence to encourage people to be more interested. If you're downstate and you have a relatively conservative background, you do it slightly differently. In some cases, the Natural Lands Institute with Don McFall at the time, decided that when they had done an inventory of the state's natural resources, many of them were on private ground. In that case, they felt that not to send a letter of encouragement to the people that owned these natural resources, but to actually knock on their door and inform them that they had a plot of land that they may not realize is a prime preserver of a natural species. And that is a different form of contact. And so you have to think about these things. I want to continue with the natural history sort of the culture. We've come a long way in 100 years, but we've lost a lot in 100 years. So I'm going to go back to Teddy Roosevelt and people who were saving the Western territories. I want to look at my notes a fair bit because I've been looking at two different books that, three we've been looking at. One is about Driven Wild. When these natural areas were saved, they also were prime candidates for roads. And then they were a prime candidate for people to camp in the natural area and perhaps on top of the resource that you were trying to preserve. So that is Driven Wild by Paul Souter, and it's the era that inspired people to put in wilderness acts because the population using those territories didn't exactly know what they might be destroying. Then there's more recently there's George Fell, who a guy named Arthur Melville Pearson from the Donnelly Foundation, which supports this sort of activity, has written a book which is The Force of Nature. And George Fell, founder of the Natural Areas Movement. And George has passed on, but he's left a heritage of organizations, including the Nature Preserves Commission. In there somewhere, there's Muir and others who had a lot to do with the Yellowstone and the flooding of the Hetchy River, you know, the part of what could have been Yellowstone. There was the National Park Service put together because the forests were perhaps not being managed the best way they could be. It's very tempting to take out the large trees, and it's also tempting to clear cut because it's easier to get out your trees that you want. So there was a Forest Service. There was a National Park Service, and it had to deal with encouraging people to go to the wilderness in the first place, but then to control that was a major problem. So some of the names in here are Yard from the National Park Service, McKay Forest Preservation, Marshall, and so that was in the, I think the Forest Preserve was formed in 1905, and the Wilderness Society in 1911, and there wasn't a Wilderness Act till 1964, and Aldo Leopold was rather prominent in that. George Fell was in the area in the 30s and the 40s. He got his degree in University of Illinois and as a botanist. And he worked with people like Vestal and Shelford and Kendi. So he was a mid-era as far as we're concerned. He got his degree in 38 or 40, did a master's degree at the Michigan, University of Michigan in environmental management, land management, and then enlisted in the war situation, but did not want to go to war, so became a conscientious objector, which was quite a problem in those days because you were kind of considered to be wimpy if you didn't go to war. And he felt that this was not what his bag was, a little bit like people who didn't want to go to Vietnam. They weren't necessarily wimpy, but so the Conservation Corps had various locations throughout the country, and they weren't always organized very well. And George was a very well organized person, so he had a lot to say about that organization. He was with it for 4 years until he came out of World War II period and married Barbara, who was very cooperative and very much had the same mindset and was a partner for George for a long, long time. Some of this sort of activity goes back to the early ecologists. One of them was a guy named Coles. And so reading the landscape was getting a little bit more formal. And he worked a lot with the Indiana Dunes, and that led to that being one of the first national parks. It had, he worked out that there were sort of five stages of the dunes. There was the lake side and where you had water and where you had mussels and where you had an ecosystem there. Then you had a beach and then you had dunes and you had trees like linden trees that have sprouts and they can survive in the sand dune. And then you had behind that a swale that was damp. And then behind that you had a beech maple forest. And that sort of transect was a transect that Coles worked on. His daughter, May Watts, was a landscape person. She used to come to the Illinois and be on jury committees for landscape architect students. And she observed that railroad beds were being abandoned. And she wrote a definitive letter to the Tribune to suggest that those trails could be, those railroad beds could be trails and with vegetation on the side. And that led to a sort of plethora of these sorts of corridors in the Chicago area, where you have a little more power and a little more money and a little more willingness for the five ring counties to include railroad beds in their fairly expansive set of natural areas. So locally, and amazing enough, this is the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. You had ecologists, Vestal and Shelford. And Shelford was kind of an activist. And we talk about the loss of the remnant prairie just outside Urbana with the width of a trail. Mm. But this was an area that people like Shelford and Kendi, that followed Shelford, were using that area for demonstration of remnant prairie. So it's rather sad that here are the people who created the Ecological Union and then went off with George Fell as a leading student at that stage, more or less, and creating the Nature Conservancy from the Ecological Union. And now the Nature Conservancy is not only countrywide, but worldwide. And so some of that started here, and it continues here, and we need to know that that is the history for here, and that when we put in a trail that is so wide, we need to know that we're taking out the elements that have made it possible for these people to be committed to the area of Illinois, which is the greatest part of Illinois, which is the Grand Prairie. And when you have people like Swagman who suggested there were 13 or 14 different ecosystems north to south, and that they were very different and could be delineated and worked on, and so you could put a number to the species and sort out the soils and the glaciation and the geology and the animals. that a lot of that initiated here, a lot of it initiated in the Southern Illinois with Southern Illinois University and at Carbondale, where there are quite a few botanists. It just happens that Illinois has Shawnee Forests, and the south end of the state is not as richly glaciated as the north end, and so even though you started farming there, it wasn't as productive as in the north, and gradually the federal government has taken over those areas, and people like Swagman and Mollenbrock did a lot to start to write books about what was a prairie, what are the species, when do they come, when do they go, how rare are they, and so that you have to think about that being local. And And when we're looking at the prairie from Urbana to Danville, we're looking at some of the conservation that we should be involved with. We don't have hardly any soil that hasn't been compromised by chemicals, and the railroad included. But the railroad was put in a linear manner, and the area on the right-of-way, which is usually 100 feet, is quite relatively undisturbed. So coming back to George Fell, he would not like to be honored in this way some, because he was a pretty humble person, but very directed, and you didn't argue with George very much, because George had a way of doing things where he was pretty correct in the first place. He had he's done his homework. He came to boards with an idea, and they often agreed rather than tore the idea apart. George did his undergraduate degree here. Kendi is probably one of his mentors, Shelford too. George took on some of the, after he got a master's degree, and as he was working with the conscientious objectives people, he was also working on many different dimensions. And so he took off with the Shelford Ecological Union, and the board voted to transfer that to the Nature Conservancy. They had a lot of time trying to figure out what to name this, because it's tremendously important to have in your title the realization of who you are. Something I have problems with when you have an art foundation, which is 40 North. Not everyone knows that 40 North is a part of, is a definition of the area. They get to know that, but it's important to have something. If you're going to deal with nature, the Nature Conservancy was a very good name. Sometimes they didn't put the "the" in front of it, but it has. That's what it is now. And George worked with that for 7 years, and he was accompanied by Barbara, who was tremendous in the fact that she was the working wife who did a lot of the administration. They found a house and bought an offset press. I assume it was an offset press. It may have been earlier than that and may have been a letterpress, but I think it was an offset press. Even if it was an offset press, it's a big deal. And you don't lift these and push them around easily. And so he published his ideas, and they worked at this, and George was more or less the CEO for the Nature Conservancy in early days. Then the boards got to be a little concerned because George wanted to have chapters. He wanted each state to have a chapter, and even if it didn't have a marine situation or a mountain that needs to be preserved or a valley, he wanted that action to be spread around. Mr. Pugh, who was president at the time, wanted to target certain places that were in jeopardy and needed some support. One of the sites that Mr. Pugh wanted to preserve immediately was a sunken garden, which is on the edge of Long Island in New York, and it's on a little barrier island that is on the edge of that island. And so the sunken garden is where you have dunes and then you have a forest behind the dunes. And it's a very popular site for people from New York. It probably is only 25 miles from New York, and it's a total wilderness. It's got boardwalks all the way through it so you don't damage the forest. And it has beaches, and you can recreate, but you can also find nature. And so Mr. Pugh wanted to do that sort of thing, and the board was in conflict with George. So they, after 7 years of putting this thing together, they didn't exactly fire George. George resigned and went back to Rockford. There was another whole set of things. You have to know now that Stephen Forbes was a powerhouse who put together the Stephen Forbes, the Natural History Survey. George was in Bloomington and other places, but he felt Illinois ought to do something about their natural areas, and he sort of was the bulwark of getting the Natural History Survey into action. And now it's been a part of the state, and now it's part of the University of Illinois. So that was in the background. But George came back, and he was interested in a whole bunch of things. He was working with the state to create Illinois Nature Preserves Commission. Even before that, they were looking at an Illinois Nature Preserves Act. And that act actually succeeded in putting together forest preserves. So we have in Champaign, again, early on, it's probably about 70 or 80 years old, a forest preserve. Chicago has a forest preserve. Piatt County has a forest preserve. But throughout the state, it wasn't taken over very seriously because it has some deficiencies. If you went to a county to preserve things with the forest preserve, the rules of the game were such that it was mainly a recreational body. And that didn't have in its statutes the preservation side of things. So the next step there was George B. Hind was a conservation district. So if you go to Vermilion County, it's the Vermilion County Conservation District. And the rules of the game for the conservation districts were that it was to conserve. And if you were in a county like Champaign, you deserve to preserve prairie because Champaign County was 94% prairie. And there's a tendency to like trees, and various organizations, Isaac Walton League and others, including the Champaign County Conservation District, enjoy to put in trees, but trees were not a part of Champaign County. So the conservation districts helped, and they got to be much more popular in Illinois. George had not exactly left the Nature Conservancy. He had put together these chapters, and the Illinois chapter was getting to be bigger and better, often with George's providing a little bit of starter to get it underway, and then he would become the CEO or the secretary, not necessarily the president, but he was in there with a lot of information. George had grown up, he was born in Chicago area, but his father was a doctor, a psychologist, and he was employed at Rockford. So the family moved to Rockford, and there Dr. Fell, Egbert Fell, had an avocation, and the avocation was to go find the botany of the area, and he became known as the botany doctor. Sometimes this has some medical involvement because a lot of the pharmaceuticals that you use come from nature, and he probably knew that, but he also preserved a lot of the dignity of little areas that he knew about. So as George was going through botany, he communicated a lot with Father to know more about the species. And Barbara was into that too. In fact, their honeymoon was in places that were nature. And so we go back to Egbert Fell and the Gast family. Barbara was a Gast, and the Gast family had dignity. And George came back, and he was convinced that small boards that were compatible with his objectives were important. So he had the family lined up, and he had a small board that went on for 30-odd years. And it approved of what George was doing. Every once in a while there would be a question, but George just spent his life without much money, but he used the Institute, which had one of these boards, to create different state and federal agencies. One of the things that George wanted was to have the Department of Natural Resources, or the government, to have a body that was eventually to be the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission. It had some limitations because the state didn't want to lose control. If people were going to donate natural areas, then they meant to have some control over it. And the director of the Department of Natural Resources, which was called the Conservation Department at that stage, was a guy named Lodge. And then we come back to the local again. Lodge, you know that you go 24 miles to Monticello to find a Lodge Park. And that Lodge was the family that gave rise to a person that was in charge of the Department of Conservation. And he wanted the idea of a Nature Preserves Commission to be under the control of the Department of Conservation. George, on the other hand, was wanting to create an organization that was totally independent. He didn't necessarily want it in the Department of Conservation. He was looking around for any sort of agencies. He would communicate with the governor, Otto Kerner and Ogilvie and others, and they too would have their political interest in their established Department of Conservation. So George was wanting to know that if a private citizen gave a plot of land to the state, that it would be in, assured that that plot would remain unviolated, that legally it would be there forever. And George was also wanting to see that the state would help to maintain that area and to establish privileges with the donors. Sometimes the donors really wanted to have the area while they were alive, or they would have a good reason for keeping it. But George and cohorts would be out there telling them what they had and why it was important to be preserved. And it might take 30 years, and someone would call in and I think we're ready to donate. Now, how do you keep that donation intact? There were two attempts to make organizations that would ensure this legally. And if they got so far, George would keep adding a legal question to make sure that that happened. Eventually it happened. It didn't happen independently. It became the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission. I went to it recently at Springfield to talk about the railroad beds. And so there's a 9-member committee there, mostly elected by the governor. And it is relatively independent of politics. Both sides of the aisle politically enjoy these sorts of things, and they feel a desire to not have to be down to 1/100th of 1% of what was their heritage. So both sides of the aisle are interested in doing this. So you have a 9-person board, and they have a staff now of 13 or more people in regions, and those regional offices get to be with a piece of land that they need to preserve, or the owners want to preserve it, and they come present to that board, and the board approves it. Perhaps they will put it on hold for a while because somebody wants a parking lot, and that may be on top of an endangered species, so there needs to be more work. But they have, over the years, done this very, very successfully. And George was there, and George was the CEO for 20 years. And once again, it was felt that George had his foot in the Natural Land Institute, which was in Rockford, and doing a lot of research behind this. He had also created a chapter, the Illinois Nature Preserve, TNC.
Nature Conservancy.
Yes, and so that was booming, and he was on that board as a CEO also, and it was felt that George was what they wanted, but and also George provided these services with minimal amount of money. So it was rather helpful to be able to rely on George doing this, George and Barbara. So George was there for 20 years, I think, and then they decided to dispense with George because he was in conflict of interest because he had his feet in too many other agencies. So George backed off and went to Rockford, and so
you have 18 minutes.
18 minutes. We've got to watch the time here. So at that time, the state started to put money into natural areas, and that was good. They acquired quite a few, a surprising number. Sometimes they were extremely small, but they would be preserving an endangered species. So that most of the endangered species that we have are preserved in those small areas. So it wasn't a matter of the volume of, it was the quality of what you preserved. And it was across the state. And then John Swagman got into the act. He was in southern Illinois, along with Muhlenberg and others. But John was working with the Nature Conservancy, and he suggested that there were about 13 or 14 different ecosystems in Illinois, from the north where you have pines and more or less a little bit of tundra, and then to the grasslands and to the bottomlands on the Mississippi and the Illinois rivers, a little bit of Ozarks, and we've been talking about this because we've been talking about a book by Jefferson Post that deals with these ecosystems. And so it was decided to formalize that in a thing called the Illinois Nature Preserves Inventory. And Jack White, John White now, he's changed his name a little, so we're a little confused about Jack's background because we know him as Jack. So I have to wonder, there's a musician, Jack White, so sometimes you get confusion in these things. But John White has done a lot to define natural areas, and so he was in charge of a team of people who went around the state and they listed perhaps 1,000 different sites that could be preserved. And George was behind that, and it was done in about 1973, and it's been continued. It was revised recently. So George continued to lobby and to improve things. He was sort of starved of some finance, but then this inventory was funded largely by a Joyce Foundation that wanted to see it happen and put in a considerable amount of money so that John White and his troop could do the work that was involved. And some of it was pretty rough and tough. You had to be out there in all sorts of circumstances. Because when you identify what is in a prairie, for instance, you can't do it at one time. If you go in the spring right now, you'll be looking for hyacinths or liliaceous things. But then at another time, you'll be looking for something quite different. So you have to visit these areas constantly to figure out what is the whole spectrum of the plants and animals that are there. And the animals are important, too. If it's a Franklin ground squirrel and there's not many Franklin ground squirrels, then that might be something that you want to look at. I'm looking at my notes here because this is not easy to remember, but it was very nice to be at the Prairie State Conservation Coalition meetings, which is another one of these organizations that's putting things together. And they are prototypes, so they end up in other states and other countries. So a lot of these, the Nature Preserves Commission and the Nature Conservancy, they are now in other states that have equivalent organizations or are an attachment to the Nature Conservancy. And then it goes outside of to other countries. And raises an amazing amount of money to acquire sites that are extremely endangered. George, when he sort of was retired out of this, got to be looking at things like cemeteries and the documentation of those, and working with Betts, who was an early protagonist, a botanist who looked at cemeteries. I remember going to Bud, which is a little town, a little village west of White, and there on the railroad line there was a nice little prairie, and so there was Betts and a team of people going to visit the prairie. The prairie had not been very successful in a way because once the farmer that was adjacent to the bed realized that this was going to be a public site, he dug it up. And that is always a problem. Eventually, George, you would go to a Illinois Nature Preserves Commission meeting, and George would be there, and you'd walk around with George. He was kind of quiet and mild-mannered, but he had a tremendous direction. You weren't going to change George's mind, but the interest was that George's mind was quite compatible with everyone else's mind. They just hadn't had this sort of leadership. So George's organization at the national and international level gave a lot of people who had this sort of thought in mind but didn't have that sort of organizational skill to get it into action. So as a result of this, there are bodies in the Chicago area that look at the Chicago area, the natural areas, and you have a plethora of small organizations. So the number of trusts came from a small amount to perhaps thousands of trusts that we have now that are interested in specific items. It might be an orchid, or it might be a interaction between an insect and a rattlesnake master plant. maybe looking to try and find out where the Hori Pakun is growing, where you go to Weston and find a gazillion of lead plants. So now you have a good reason for doing these things, and it's extremely popular. And one of the things that the Prairie State Conservation Coalition were saying was, go for it. These people are wanting to do this, and they need your organization. So don't assume that because people have voted in a certain way that they're going to object to what you're doing. They want it too. So go for it. That has been rather a positive. It means that you go to other countries and the same thing is happening, and sometimes with money that comes from the U.S. to do it. It is also has counterparts in Europe, especially. Some of George's primary interests were encouraged by European efforts along the same lines. And yes, now if you move into a cemetery that's designated as a natural area by the Department of Conservation with the help of the Nature Preserves Commission, then you can't walk into that cemetery and say, this needs to be mown. You have to communicate with the appropriate agency. But then at the last meeting I went to, there was a move to consolidate some of these efforts into the Department of Natural Resources, which replaced the Department of Conservation. And immediately I felt hackles rise because that means that the state and the politics has its charge of these natural areas, often that are given or easemented by people who are told that they're going to have this opportunity forever, and it might just change. So I think in the near future there probably will be some debate about the future of the Nature Preserves Commission, and some of you might want to be involved. There is a meeting at the Forbes building on Tuesday about some of these sorts of things. So if you want to be there, it's at 4 o'clock in the Forbes building. How's my time?
7 minutes.
7 minutes, okay. I want to say that there are certain industries, Commonwealth Edison has a spin-off, which is the Clean Energy Foundation, provides money for these sorts of thoughts. The Donnelly Foundation does the same sort of thing. And in the report for George Fell, it's done by a guy named Pearson, and his book is The Force of Nature. George Fell, founder of the Natural Areas Movement. And that's very true. Mm. And the other book that I... But he works with the Donnelly Foundation, and that's another one of these agencies that feel they have a responsibility to look at open space and natural areas. It's counterpart to the art industry that will help people like the Art Institute of Chicago. It wouldn't operate without the help of a lot of people. That's the way it's done here, rather than through the government. And so again, it it's there. I have to say that George and Barbara have both passed on, and Jerry Paulson took over. And Jerry has done a lot to work with the Institute, and more recently, Karen Weir is taken over, and it's W-I-T-T-E-R, and she had never met George Fell, but she is very much a person that is following in his footsteps. So the creation of the Nature Conservancy and all these other agencies is tremendously important and will go on for hundreds of years. So you then are hoping and that the people that come by will do the same sort of thing. Some of them are very committed to doing things without much money. Guy Fraker was speaking at about the sort of thing and honoring people who have done this sort of work, but also reporting that as an attorney, he didn't get much money for doing this sort of things. And George didn't get much money for doing his sort of thing either. And even so, he would want to put together some funds to keep the local chapter together, to give it a start. He started the move from the Ecological Union to the Nature Conservancy with something like $300. And we got to Washington with like $15 in their pocket or something like that. You have to know that there's a commitment to this sort of thing. I want to say that you need to know that there's a lot of local history here. These were people who were moving and shaking a national and an international idea. And they were here in Monticello, here in Champaign, and here on the railroad that we're putting in as a trail. So how do we work with the federal government and with the state government, the Department of Transportation, Department of Natural Areas, to preserve the dignity of the soil and the prairie remnants that run between St. Joe and Ogden, which is not the bedroom community that comes to Champaign. I can understand you can use a wide trail to Champaign. It's there. Mm. And there is some prairie remnants on it, preserved. But you don't want them disturbed by planting in seed that is not what was here to start with. These prairies look a little ratty. Sometimes the railroad bed has been sitting for 20 years, and during that time, the trees have grown to be 6 and 8 inches across, and you have to remove those trees. And those trees can also change the pH of the soils. And so we don't have the best, but what we have, we need to save. And so I'm looking for a change in policy from Ogden through to Danville. It's not necessarily right through to Danville, but the prairie area goes to Oakwood. And there, Doris Westfield picked a seed off the railroad bed to create a prairie on the Nature Preserves Commission, on the Vermilion County Conservation District at Forest Glen. So we need to preserve that sort of dignity. And then how do you do it? Who do you talk to? It ranges from the forest preserve, which is recreational more, to the other agencies that we might work with. Time's up. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. And I have a little bit of information here about Ruth Walker's memorial. It will be at Channing Murray, so it'll be upstairs from the Red Herring on April the 7th, which is a Saturday. No information online as of now what time that will be, but we've got a couple of weeks yet before that, so maybe between now and then there'll be some information. Yes. Exactly when
it would be nice to have people there in thinking about Ruth Walker, who was a very interesting person.